Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast with me, Matthew Wade. Unfortunately, I'm flying solo this week. I can't even get Stephen to come and make up some excuse about why I'm not here, because this is having to be recorded at a slightly unusual time. And of course, occasionally, despite the fact we pretend not to, even us at the Daily Canon have our own lives. So, without further ado, let's crack on with what's happened. Of course, in all things Arsenal, it's been a fairly quiet week. There's been lots of rumours, lots of transfer stories knocking around and all the gossip therein, and of course, further reaction to things that have happened in previous weeks. But there's an absence of absolutely concrete news. Lots of things that have been reported as concrete news, but aren't actually concrete news. Looking ahead, obviously, things are going to have to happen fairly quickly this summer in terms of transfer dealings, because the World Cup will be upon us before we know it, as international friendlies have recently reminded us. And, of course, beyond that, we have the truncated transfer window in the Premier League, with English transfers now stopping before the first game of the season. Of course, being the only European league to implement this as a standard modus operandi for this season puts, of course, the British clubs at somewhat of a disadvantage compared to their peers, allowing European teams selling to British clubs to force prices up, but also making it harder for British teams to drag deals out in their own best interests, whether it be buying or selling. And of course, targets you miss out on, rather than everyone else missing out on them at the same time, can then promptly be hoovered up by the Spanish giants or whoever as soon as the English transfer window closes. So accordingly, those on the negotiations team, whether it be Sven Mislintat, whether it be Hasfami doing the contracts, or whether it be Raul Senlehi and his various contacts around Europe, need to be forming strong contacts with those people we're looking to bring in, because otherwise it'll be very easy for us to be strung along and then miss out on the players we want, which of course creates an even greater premium on getting the business done early. The transfers that seem most likely to happen at this stage, judging by the level of coverage they've got and also, well, also the lack of obvious competition in both aspects, is the somewhat surprising free transfer of Stefan Lichtsteiner from Juventus to battle with Hector Bellerin for the right-back slot, and importantly give Hector Bellerin the chance to occasionally get a rest, as opposed to having to cover the entire right flank of Arsenal FC for about 50 games a season, as was the case this year. And of course, Lichtsteiner himself is probably a player that most Arsenal fans have some awareness of, at least some sort of concept about, because of the level of experience he has in the European game. I mean, he's 34 now, which you'd normally think of a player sort of coming towards the winter of his career, and certainly if the player's being let go by a club like Juventus, a lot of fans might be asking why we'd be wanting to persevere with him. But of course, it's not quite that simple, because he did actually play 34 times for Juventus last year, and therefore was very much a regular part in what was another title-winning squad, and another squad that made some waves in the Champions League, even if they didn't quite manage to get past the eventual winners, Real. In terms of Lichtsteiner's CV, it's very impressive. Starting off in Switzerland, as you'd expect for a Swiss player, he then played 89 times for Lille, 100 times for Lazio, scoring 3 goals for each club, and then 201 times for Juventus, scoring 12 goals. He's also the captain of the Swiss national team with 98 caps and indeed 8 goals for the Swiss team. He can obviously play right back, right wing back. He has also played right midfield, a sort of perhaps a prototypical ageing Swiss Lauren, perhaps, particularly as he's not entirely averse to the dark arts, even if he's not quite in the Sergio Ramos style. Now, this means, you know, it's important to remember that if he played 34 times for Juventus, it wasn't at a club where there was absolutely no competition. I mean, given the formation Juventus played, often relying on wing-backs as part of their standard formation, they've got Juan Cuadrado, who's obviously a very attacking wing-back who can play as a winger. And when Juventus are expecting to dominate teams or need to go for goals, as we've seen in European competition, Cuadrado gets the nod because he's a more overtly attacking player, although obviously not as defensively stable. Lichtsteiner's CV obviously suggests a very experienced player, and a very experienced player at the top level in more than one European league and for his national team. And I mean, he's had a great career to date. And he's, I suppose he's best known for his incredible fitness, going up and down the line, and his ability to, yeah, mix a little bit of attacking flair with being very solid defensively. He's also quite an intelligent guy, and as well as the usual Swiss trait of speaking several languages, he's interested in more than just the most basic things that a lot of footballers seem to be. You know, he's not just driving fast cars and tattooing himself, and that's indeed reflected in his relationship, because while his wife, Manuela Markworth, might also be a fitness instructor like so many footballers but other halves, she's also a qualified economist with some career experience in that field. So, you know, if he was a complete idiot in the way that some footballers are often portrayed as, he probably wouldn't have found himself with someone like that. Now, obviously, Lichtstein is being very careful to say that nothing's been concluded, and indeed, it's impossible for anything to be concluded because technically his contract doesn't run out for another 26 days, as is the way with Bosman signings, you know, until all the T's are crossed and the I's dotted, they tend not to be confirmed. I mean, there's still people expressing doubts about whether Max Meyer is available, even though that there's a bit of reporting that he's going to Hoffenheim. He was a player that I was keen on us trying to get, but I imagine there's quite a lot of European teams trying to get him. But if he's decided to go to Hoffenheim, they've got a great young coach. And of course, they're a team that seem to be going places, and it would mean that for a young guy, he wouldn't be leaving his home country quite so soon. Also, of course, we've been looking at players who aren't so free. The closest in terms of Lichtsteiner, in terms of transfer cost, would be the young PSG midfielder, Yassine Adli, who is a French midfielder, Algerian descent. Obviously, there's been some great players who tick that particular accommodation box. He's only played once for PSG this season, but he has played a lot for the French youth groups with great success. Now, obviously, he's not going to be threatening the first team immediately if he does come to Arsenal. A lot of people are saying the transfer has been done, but let's face it, until it's on Arsenal.com, it's never done. For those that don't know anything about him, he's a sort of number 10 who can also play deeper in midfield and out wide. He's quite a big guy as well. He's nearly 5'11", so he's not a short ass. So unlike the usual Arsenal collection of diminutive number 10s, he could be a slightly larger number 10. He's also a relatively physical player just for someone who is best known for his passing and creativity. And he's very versatile, and he seems to read the game very well and play with a great deal of intelligence, which allows him to switch between positions relatively seamlessly, which of course, if we're looking at a slightly more tactically sophisticated setup under Unai Emery, can only be a good thing. And if the player is likely to be coming to Arsenal, then certainly any relationship formed with Unai Emery can only assist that. Again, not yet confirmed, but a player who has a lot of potential. He's very highly thought of. I mean, PSG have apparently thrown more money at him, which he's turned down. And there's rumours that the Spanish giants want to try and take him as well. So it's far from a done deal, but it does seem as though Arsenal are in the driving seat, judging by all reports. The other transfer rumour, which seems to have a lot of traction because of the duration for which it's been going on for and the consistency in all the reporting, is the aforementioned, and we've spoken about him on this podcast before, Sokratis Papastathopoulos. Well, and there's people wandering around in the background here, so I apologise for my slight confusion there. Sokratis Papastathopoulos, who is a 29-year-old centre-half who's been playing for the last few seasons for Dortmund. Got a decent goal record for Dortmund, averages a couple of goals a season. Hasn't had the best year or and a half with Dortmund, but then the entire Dortmund backline hasn't had the best year and a half. Thomas Tuchel, for all his creative flair and bringing the attention of PSG amongst other clubs, didn't really do that much to stabilise the Dortmund defence, which looked possibly latter-day Wenger-esque on a regular basis. And the subsequent coaches at the club seemed to be even worse in terms of defensive organisation. So, yes, it's hard to judge him just on the basis of that. I mean, he's certainly not a glamorous signing. He's not a world-class centre-half and doesn't suggest that he's ever going to be one, given that he's 29. But his contract runs out a year from now, hence he'd be at a fairly reasonable price, at rumoured about 15 million-ish. He's obviously started in Greece as playing for AEK Athens at only 17, whereas he played for them for a couple of seasons. Then he moved on to Genoa, where he became a bit of a fan favourite, playing first team regular. And moved on to AC Milan at the age of 22. I think was Maximiliano Allegri's first signing. So obviously he has some credibility as far as that's concerned, because Allegri does know a centre-half when he sees one. But didn't really break through at Milan, which is hardly surprising given the players they had ahead of him. They moved on to Werder Bremen for a couple of seasons, and then eventually on to Borussia Dortmund, where he has been the mainstay of their defence. Like the rest of their defenders, he has been negatively impacted by the departure of Mats Hummels to Bayern Munich. And once again, a German team selling its best players to Bayern Munich, which seems to be the structure of German football, as far as one can tell. But like Lichtsteiner, he's a very experienced player. He has some leadership capabilities, as demonstrated by the fact he's vice-captain of Greece even, and vice-captain of Borussia Dortmund. And with Koscielny obviously being banjaxed with his Achilles that we have to hope that he does eventually recover from, and Mertesacker retiring, and obviously lots of questions to be asked about Skrodan Mustafi. An experienced central defender is a massive priority for this club going forward, and certainly Sokratis represents that. He's played in three European leagues at a relatively high level and has been first choice for most of his career. There have been lots of others, rumours of course, going on, some which also seem to have quite a lot of legs to them, but seem further away from possible completion. Çalgar Soyuncu from Freiburg, the young Turkish defender that we've been linked with for a while, seems a very impressive prospect. He's only 22, but has played 9 games for Turkey and 50-odd games for Freiburg in the top flight in the Bundesliga. He's a physical, big player, 6'2", very quick, very strong, aggressive, but very comfortable on the ball, which obviously makes him quite an alluring package, and models his game on Carlos Puyol, who obviously had a fairly good career for a player that probably didn't have the physical or technical gifts that Soyuncu has. He would represent something very exciting, because he does show the characteristics that would suggest a potential top level footballer. But he's relatively unproven, of course. Freiburg haven't really troubled European competition in some time. And the rumoured fee of between 25 and 30 million is obviously quite a big punt to be making on someone who's relatively unproven. And presumably, if Arsenal are genuinely interested, the negotiations will be ongoing about that aspect, particularly given the limited transfer budget we have at our disposal as a club at the moment. Other rumoured transfers is the one that won't quite die despite the utter implausibility of it, which is Ousmane Dembele, formerly of Dortmund and now of Barcelona, who's had a difficult season at the Nou Camp, but started to come into his own towards the end of the season and has been really good for France the last two or three times he's played for the French national side. And much as I would love this to happen, because he's a proper winger, but he's a winger who's two-footed, can beat players very quick, cross with either foot, good finisher. You know, for me, he was a player that I was desperately wanting us to get our mitts on before he went to Dortmund. And given Wenger's tapping into French football, it seems somewhat ridiculous that didn't happen. But understandably, the player felt that he could get a better shot at the first team at Dortmund, who, for all their recent success, still have a lower reputation in Europe-wide than Arsenal, and still probably have more scope for young players to get into the team on a regular basis. The Barcelona president has made it very clear that he doesn't want to sell Dembele. Dembele's camp seemed to be making noises that they'd be open to the move, but Dembele himself, I think, would like to stay at Barcelona. And given the size of the club, and let's face it, playing with Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez and all the others is probably quite nice. But the biggest sticking point would be the fee, frankly. The transfer fee would be that bought Barcelona paid for him could go up to £140 million if he hits every target they want, but it probably is a guaranteed £100 million. And Barcelona, I can't imagine, be willing to sell him at a significant loss, given that he's a 21-year-old player with the world at his feet, unless there is a particular attempt to bring in someone else who's at an even higher level, which there aren't that many people knocking around. There have been rumours about him joining Arsenal on loan for a season. I mean, that seems unlikely, but it's certainly more plausible than an outright transfer, because Arsenal just can't afford the player at this point in time, unless there's a complete change in the policy of the Cronkies in terms of putting money into the club. And frankly, yes, it, no matter how much we don't like to think of it in that way, a step from Barcelona to Arsenal is a step down for a player, and tends only to happen if a player is either being marginalised or isn't very happy. And although Dembele hasn't had the best time of things and has had injury problems and has struggled to adapt to Barcelona's style of play, I don't think that's going to happen yet. Going back to the previously discussed transfers, there's strong reports that Sokratis will be an Arsenal player by the end of the week, and that this fee will be 15 million. But that's according to Kicker in Germany, who are relatively reliable as a publication. But let's face it, it's still the media, and knowing the way that Arsenal do their business, they don't know shit, because seeing as Unai Emery appeared to blindside all the media experts, despite being an entirely logical signing as new manager, it'd be fair to say that they probably don't know what they're talking about in terms of specifics. Looking beyond that, there is the potential signing of Yassine Adli, as mentioned, and because he is effectively out of contract, the compensation Arsenal would have to play would be minimal, because he's barely played for PSG and hasn't really established himself as a first-team player. So the discussion is that the amount of compensation would be about £250,000, which for a player of any potential moving from a top-five club is absolute peanuts. So if Arsenal can get the deal over the line, it seems like a bit of a no-brainer to take a punt on someone who is so highly thought of and certainly possesses a lot of the attributes that would fit the Arsenal style of play. Emery seems to like him, and let's face it, if PSG are trying to throw money at a player and he's turning them down, then that says something about the player. One of the more curious transfer stories that's been ticking around is around former Arsenal youth player Ozan Osyurkov, who is currently playing in Turkey for Beşiktaş, has done very well since leaving Arsenal. He obviously joined us as a youth player, Dutch-Turkish player, did pretty well in our youth setup, but didn't see a place in the first team for him, and was offered first team football at Beşiktaş, and has now obviously become a Turkish international. Now, the key thing about this is that Arsenal have a 30% future transfer clause. So if Beşiktaş sell him to someone, Arsenal get 30% of the transfer. Now, the downside of this is his contract runs out at the end of June this year. Now, there's been all kinds of stories that Özcan's going to be sold to Newcastle, in that Beşiktaş is essentially going to renew his contract after it expires, so that they don't have to pay the clause to Arsenal, and then promptly flog him to Newcastle, which is obviously of dubious morality, but also it suggests an incredible degree of trust with the player himself. There was rumours around that Arsenal might be interested in bringing Osyurkov back themselves, as you know, a creative central midfielder with a good engine. You can see why they might be interested, but equally, he doesn't seem to be at quite the level of a player that is going to be good enough to play regularly for the Arsenal first team. Whether he could step up, having made the move to the English Premier League, we may find out whether he comes to Arsenal or Newcastle. But it's an interesting one to keep an eye on, because essentially, yes, will it be a case of the Turkish team successfully circumnavigating their contractual agreements through technicalities, or will it not? Much to sort of keep an eye on from that one, but also in terms of future strategy, in terms of selling players and how to manage that. Other linked players are, of course, the usual goalkeeper, which we've been linked repeatedly to Bernd Leno from Leverkusen for much of the season. Hasn't had the best season in Germany, was very highly thought of beforehand. Leverkusen have bought another goalkeeper who is set to either compete with Leno or perhaps even take his position. Szmislintat said to be very keen on the player, but I personally haven't seen enough of him to know if that's likely. And I guess Arsenal's decision is probably going to be influenced largely by what's happening with David Ospina, because Petr Cech now is the number one shirt and he's going nowhere. Ospina depends on whether he's happy being a backup. And although a goalkeeper is a priority for Arsenal, it's not as big a priority as certain other positions, particularly its central defence, cover at right back, as we previously discussed, and perhaps someone who can actually play out wide like a proper winger rather than a striker or a number 10 playing out wide. Other linked players, there's the usual Jean Serre links from Nice. He hasn't had quite as good a season, which he hoped to move to Barcelona last season, and that fell through, and his form's kind of tailed off a bit. He's a very fit box-to-box player, lots of energy, good passer, but hasn't had as good a season. And the fee wouldn't be small. It'd be at least a £30 million fee. But unless Aaron Ramsey decides not to renew his contract, it seems like a very unlikely move. One thing that is particularly amusing as a transfer rumour at the moment is Mario Balotelli, who's also at Nice, but his contract is running out, so he would be available on a free transfer. I personally would like to see this happen because I think Balotelli would offer something very different to either of our striking options. He's much more able to drop deep or play a hold-up role, and I think he's shown a lot more maturity in Nice than he did when he was playing in England. And he has said nice things about Arsenal before, so that always goes down well. And also his set-piece expertise, whether it be at penalties or free kicks, could be a very attractive thing for an Arsenal team that has been lacking in that front for a while. Of course, whether it's the best move for Balotelli is probably unlikely because he's not going to get in the team ahead of Aubameyang, so it would depend on what formation and what style of play the manager wants to play. So I think we can safely say it's not going to happen, but I'd like it if it did. There's the usual annual links to another left-back this year. It's the same as last year, Kieran Tierney from Celtic. But again, that seems pretty unlucky. But we've got Nacho, we've got Sead Kolasinac. It's not going to happen at this time, and the chances are Tierney's going to go somewhere else between that time, between now and when we'd need another left-back. Jan Oblak is linked again, but we can't afford him, given that his release fee is £89 million. He would be a definite step up in class for the number one position, but I can't see it happening. Sergio Rico, former Sevilla goalkeeper, Sevilla goalkeeper formerly for Unai Emery, is also suggested as a target. A lot of it is would depend on what's going on with Bernd Leno and, of course, the aforementioned Ospina situation. And Rico would... he hasn't proven himself at a level of a club the same as Arsenal at this stage. So it would be a bit of a risk, particularly for a player who is so young. But a young goalkeeper is clearly an Arsenal priority. Of course, Unai Emery has joined, so once again we are linked with Stephen Nzonzi. That's right, the former Blackburn man who managed to stink out the Premier League and then go to Sevilla and be brilliant. He's not had the happiest time at Sevilla this season. He's fallen out with a couple of the coaches. Seems a bit happier at the moment, but he's 29 now. It'd be his last chance for a big move to a big club, and certainly in terms of a defensive anchor, he would be a step up from what we have. His technical side of his game has really improved in Spain. And of course, he's a unit. He's 6'4", or perhaps even slightly taller, and a very, very good ball winner. But his technical play, his passing and ball retention has really improved at Sevilla. And while it'd be a bit of a short-term signing, it's one that isn't implausible. However, the fee probably wouldn't cheap. We'd be looking at least £20 million, probably go upwards of that. And therefore, you have to ask what Unai Emery sees his midfield setup being like as to whether Steven Nzonzi would fit that. Another one linked in midfield is Adrien Rabiot of PSG, who recently threw his toys out of the pram, having not been selected for the French national team. And he's clearly a very good player, but he seems to disagree with Unai Emery about his best role, whether he's a deep-lying playmaker or a defensive midfielder or a real box-to-box player. But the one thing that makes it a plausible deal is Arsenal have been linked with him for a few years, and his contract has only got a year left at PSG, and he doesn't seem the happiest bunny, even though he's playing for them quite regularly. Beyond that, there's the usual links to Johnny Evans, but that seems to have gone quiet, even though his release fee would make him just a £3 million signing. And of course, if we're looking for experience in the Premier League, we could do a lot worse, even if he isn't the top-level defender we'd ideally be wanting. There's usual links to Malcolm from Bordeaux, who we were talking about in January, but it doesn't look like we're going to be prioritising that because he's a wide player that very much wants to cut in. And given that the signings we made in January have only led to further congesting that part of the pitch, if we're going to bring in a wide player, it's going to be one that is much more comfortable playing in a wider role. There's also talks, rather ridiculously, about Corentin Tolisso from Bayern Munich, who moved from Lyon the year before, who's done pretty well domestically after a shaky start in Bayern. But apparently there's talk of him being available, but, you know, 50, 60 million. So it comes into the same territory as Ousmane Dembele. Other less exciting links are a Tunisian winger called Bassem Srarfi, who plays for Nice, who's been doing quite well. Didn't have the greatest season for Nice, but has been very good for his national team. But it's more likely that he ends up replacing Mahrez at Leicester, who have also been tracking him. And then there's the usual links to Emil Forsberg at Red Bull Leipzig. But given the fee they're talking about, 40-odd million, no matter how much Anders Limpar tells us in the press that he would love to see the player play for Arsenal, at 40 million, someone who is more of a number 10 than a wide player seems extremely unlikely. The same thing is, I'd apply to the Dennis Pratt talks, or Pret, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but anyway, the Belgian midfielder who we looked a lot when he was at Anderlecht as a teenager, but he'd be at Sampdoria now, and there's talk of 20-odd million. And that's probably, I don't think he brings enough that we don't already have in the squad for us to be a worthwhile investment of that. There's still also the links to Alexander Golovin from CSKA Moscow, who obviously we saw score a cracking free kick against us in the Europa League and has had a good season and we were tracking for a while. But there's still the issues around him getting a work permit, and also the fact he's going to play a leading role for Russia at the World Cup is probably likely to increase his value. And again, does he represent what we want? I mean, he's a bit more of a disciplined midfielder, despite being a good passer, than some of those that we have. But again, even though his youth means he isn't fully developed and he's not really at a significant level improvement from where we were before. Usual conversations about Nabil Fekir and Thomas Lemar, but both look more likely to go to Liverpool, given that they're throwing money around, pretending that, you know, every year they don't spend any money. And of course, they raked in lots of money from Coutinho, but they've spent all that already and they're looking to spend another 100 million plus this summer, with already the signings of Fabinho for Monaco, which I think was a shame that we couldn't pick him up. But Liverpool got in there first. And also the midfielder Naby Keita from Leipzig, who they're spending about 100 million on those two already. And then to bring in Lemar or Fekir after that, we're talking a lot of money. And there's still obviously links to every other centre-half in Europe, whether it be Abdou Diallo at Mainz, who we had looked at for a bit, or even Toby Alderweireld from Spurs, who seems to be in the danger of getting shoved out the door there. But these are all seem to be clutching at straws a little bit. But, you know, there's plenty of stories to monitor, plenty of things to keep an eye on. And there's certainly seems likely that one or two players will be joining the club before the World Cup, or certainly, if not before, then during the World Cup. And, of course, that's going to be quite exciting for us. And we will do special podcasts breaking news about those if there's any significant signings. Beyond transfer dealings, obviously there is the ongoing issue of contracts at Arsenal. There is Aaron Ramsey, will he, won't he? Sounds more likely than he will than it would a few weeks ago. But again, until the deal is signed, we all know how this plays at Arsenal. A contract isn't signed until the contract's signed and announced. And the players can string us along quite happily, as we've seen in the past. So again, it basically all comes down to Ramsey. The club apparently have offered him a 5-year deal and offered a significant wage rise, but it all depends on what the player wants to do. Similarly, Jack Wilshere, where we are now, as I said, less than a month away from him being free to go wherever he wants, and he's already free to talk to other teams. And the fact he hasn't signed for Arsenal does seem to suggest that he wants out. Rumours of West Ham and Crystal Palace do make you wonder why he'd want to go there, particularly as he hasn't seen whether he can form a positive relationship with the new manager. But he hasn't signed the contract. And until he doesn't renew his contract at Arsenal, particularly after an increased offer was made by Arsenal, it seems likely that his time in North London is coming to an end. Watch this space, I guess. Outside of transfer conversations, of course, we had a discussion last week about Arsenal's new sleeve sponsor, the Visit Rwanda. And of course, that's a very complicated political situation. Just sort of expanding on that a bit from what we said last week, the Rwandan president, as some of you will know, Paul Kagame, is an Arsenal fan and appears to have okayed this sponsorship of the Arsenal shirt sleeves for a fee of up to £30 million over 2 or 3 years, I think it is, or 4 years, without consulting his national parliament, which possibly didn't go down very well. There's been a lot of criticism of it, not just because of the human rights record that has been variable, shall we say, under his leadership, and certainly his willingness to crush all opposition through intimidatory, if not necessarily murderous, tactics when it comes to elections. But of course, at the same time, he is overwhelmingly popular in Rwanda. He is the person that ended up ending the genocide and essentially ending the civil war, and has been president during the greatest period of economic growth they've seen in that country in well over half a century. And tourism has been a key part of that, so you can see why they'd want to prioritise that. There's been lots of criticism because, of course, Rwanda are a massive receiver of aid, although the economic growth does mean that the amount of aid they're reliant upon, rather than it making 80% of their national budget as it did just after the end of the genocide, it is now about 17% of the national budget, which is still very significant. But obviously the growth of tourism as a foreign exchange generator has been very important to them for that. Is it still something that we should feel comfortable with as Arsenal fans? It's a tricky one. It's a tricky one because on one hand, you don't want to be necessarily associated with a regime that does suppress true democracy from happening and does occasionally have a track record of making people disappear or certainly get locked up. But equally, at the same time, desperately poor countries who are reliant on tourism for boosting their economy have to be able to exploit that. And of course, as we've seen with Manchester City, with Paris Saint-Germain, with various different sponsorships around Europe, for the Middle Eastern nations, football sponsorship is the most, despite being very expensive, is still probably the most efficient way of getting your name and the concept of what you do out to as many people globally as possible. And given how popular Arsenal are in Rwanda and given how popular Arsenal are across Africa, it could be said to be targeting not just the tourism from the rich Western world, but also more local tourism. The morality of it is questionable, but at the end of the day, so much really depends on how much Rwanda's economic growth over the next few years, and given the targets they've set themselves, allows them to continue some of the more positive aspects of reform within the country, whether it be increasing women's rights or improving educational standards, which they have actually been doing to a far greater degree than the number of the Middle Eastern states we were referring to, and are very happy across Europe to accept the money of when it comes to football sponsorship. So it's not entirely clean, it's not entirely happy feeling, but it isn't any dirt in a lot of other deals, I would suggest, at this point. But the proof of the pudding will be in what happens in Rwanda between now and then. And it's one for us all to keep an eye on, I think. And if it does backfire, I think it's on us as fans to make sure the club know how we feel about it. Morality seems to be a very fluid thing in football, but we do have a responsibility as a fan base to try and put pressure on our teams to act in the right way. In other news, it looks like PSG's goalkeeping coach is going to be coming to replace Gerry Payton. He's worked with Unai Emery, obviously, at a couple of different clubs. And with Gerry Payton being on the out, and let's face it, a number of people have been very critical of his training methods for a while, and Payton himself has had some injury problems which have limited some of all his work he can do with the goalkeepers. I think this change was always likely to happen. And given the massive improvements seen by Areola at PSG over the last 18 months, there's something that we can feel optimistic about. I believe the coach's name is Javi Garcia, which slightly confused me when I saw the news, because I was thinking we're bringing in the ex-Man City midfielder, but no, it's a goalkeeping coach. Other than that, there's not been a great deal happening in Arsenal world. Some of you may have noticed the story about Paul Pogba referring to Abu Diaby as a player that was better than him and a player he learnt a lot from. And while we've all been very critical of the latter days of the Wenger regime and certainly the defensive capacity of the teams, it is very easy to forget that great crop of players we had between, say, 2006 and 2011 was massively undermined by a series of incredibly cruel injuries that were mostly the result of vindictive challenges from opposition players. And Diaby, of course, was a player who at 19 came into our squad and looked like a potential world beater. And at times when he was fit, totally dominated games, both physically and technically. But having his ankle shattered by some non-league well, very soon non-league, nobody, Dan Smith from Sunderland, trying to make a name for himself. And then subsequent bad tackles he received on the end of that sadly meant that his career petered out into a sort of injured mess when it should have been hitting its absolute peak. And there is no doubt that Abu Diaby had all the qualities to one day become a world-class midfielder and be that player that Arsenal desperately needed, and in fact still need, as a physical, athletic midfielder who can both win the ball but also has the skill to play the complicated passing game that we want to see. And yes, it's such a shame. And I think Paul Pogba's right to say that at his peak, Diaby was a better player than Pogba, even though Pogba is a better player than we're seeing at Manchester United. Elsewhere, it was quite interesting to see the fallout from the Champions League final. Zinedine Zidane, 3 Champions League victories in 2.5 seasons. It's pretty good for a manager. And then walk off twirling your cane. Thank you and good night. Because I suppose it's not going to get any better for him than that. He's equaled the most European Cup victories of any manager, set the record for the most successive European Cup victories, and all within the minimum possible time frame for doing so. So Real Madrid are looking for a new manager. And of course, one of the rumoured new managers is Arsene Wenger. The irony being, of course, that Zidane was saying that you have to know when to go. And I think everyone would suggest that Wenger perhaps didn't quite know the answer to that question, although in mitigating circumstances it appeared that the Arsenal board certainly didn't know the answer to that question and therefore made it quite difficult for him to leave without leaving the club in the lurch. But yes, how amusing would that be? Can't see it's going to happen. I reckon they're going to try and push hard for Pochettino. But either way, as Arsenal fans, it'll be interesting because we'll get to see someone like Wenger get their stab at a major club if he wants it, which some of his recent announcements suggest that he's not entirely sure if he wants to be a day-to-day club manager. Now he's finally tasted having some freedom and is able to go punting in Cambridge with his daughter and all the rest of it. But of course, if Pochettino went there, that would be very funny for Arsenal, even though with him just renewing his new contract, Spurs would get a whacking great payoff in terms from Real Madrid. Certainly interesting times as far as that's concerned. Elsewhere, we saw Fulham come up in the playoffs, which would be good because they're a good footballing team, and Fulham are a club that Arsenal have certainly a decent record against, particularly at home, even though it's not the easiest ground to go to. But they play good football, and that tends to be something that Arsenal tends to do quite well against in terms of promoted clubs, so a long way that continue. And also just a big shout out to Rotherham bouncing back at the first attempt to the Championship, but also for slightly older football fans, Coventry City finally getting a promotion after a horrible few seasons they've had. And I'm really pleased for the fans of that club because with everything that's been going on with their ground, with the way that the team rapidly dropped down divisions, the way there was a massive sell-off of everything connected to that club, anything that can allow them to get a bit more stability and start getting back to a level of, you know, it's a decent-sized city and it's been a relatively successful football club. And lest we forget, they gave us great pleasure in 1987 by beating Spurs in the FA Cup when we won the League Cup. So, you know, there's a special place in my heart for Coventry City for that alone. So major congratulations to get to them. Looking elsewhere, there's been a little bit of information about players being excited to see Unai Emery take over as manager, the aforementioned Aaron Ramsey, and also Alex Iwobi, who notably scored a nice goal for Nigeria at Wembley against England and looks to be raring to go for the World Cup. And hopefully Alex can have a good World Cup and really play himself into the manager's plans for next season and kick on. Particularly as interesting, we saw towards the end of the season him playing in different roles, slightly deeper roles for the Arsenal team. And while he's a frustratingly inconsistent player whose decision-making needs work, there's no doubt that physically and technically he has the capacity to be an extremely effective link midfielder, whether that be an attacking midfielder or even in a slightly deeper role with a change of focus. So I'm still supporting Alex and looking forward to seeing him doing well at the World Cup. Right. That really is all there is to talk about in the Arsenal world this week. I've been looking, scouring, trying to find if there's anything else beyond that, and there really isn't at all, unless you want even wilder speculation about players or coaches coming in. But yeah, I think that's about it. So with that in mind, obviously, as I said, if we have any major signings, there'll be special podcasts about them. And likely, by all the rumours that we're hearing, there will be at least someone to discuss either before or during next week's podcast. And of course, after that, we've got the World Cup to look forward to, which might not be the most Arsenal-heavy World Cup of all time, but it is something still worth considering because it obviously will affect our players that are playing there, both in terms of if they do well, but also in terms of their fatigue for the season ahead. And I think we need to have a look forward at their chances going forward. That's all from me this week. We'll be back with more of the team next week, if not before. And have a great week, listeners. If you want to get in touch with us, drop us a line at @DailyCanonPod on Twitter and be happy to take on any questions you want, dig into any transfer rumours a bit more deeply, or indeed just answer any questions you have about broader subject matter. This week, I'm not on Love Sport Radio on 558 AM, but there are still fan shows going on, particularly talking about football in general and the World Cup. And of course, we will be back there. I'll be back there at some point during the World Cup period, and we will be back there with our slot next season. So watch this space for news on that. Right. Have a great week, everyone.